At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Today on The Grave Talks, Letting Glow, A Guide to Intuition, Spirituality, and Living Consciously, a new book by Phil Webster. Phil Webster is an author, actor, and dedicated spiritual seeker. After living abroad for 2 decades, he went home to his native England. And during the twilight of the COVID-19 pandemic, Phil's life was irrevocably altered. An unexplained event, coupled with a heart-wrenching loss, propelled him onto an entirely different path, a path that would ultimately give birth to his debut best-selling book, Letting Glow. Letting Glow serves as both a chronicle of Phil's personal journey into the mystical and a guide for those seeking to connect with a pinnacle of their own intuition. It invites readers into the world of mediumship, encouraging us to delve deeper into our perception of time, consciousness, and our relationship with our higher selves. With simple changes in thinking, meditation exercises, and shifting our perspective on everyday reality, we can transform our lives into ones of intent, purpose, and deeper connection with all that is. Today on The Grave Talks, Letting Glow, A Conversation with author Phil Webster. I want to say congratulations on this book. I think it's a very interesting read. And I was telling someone the other day that I was reading your book and I was going to interview you. And when I went to describe the book, I actually kind of had a hard time describing it because it seems to me it's many different things. But at the same time, it's very well put together. And so it's a very great read. So it's
kind of part memoir,
I would say, definitely. But then it also goes into, you know, your own spiritual awareness, kind of spirit guides. There's so many different parts to this book and meditations throughout the book.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I recently did an interview with a lady called Donna Sebo. I don't know if you've ever come across her from the States, but she kind of was like, okay, you need to change the name of this book. It doesn't really describe what's going on with it. I guess it's got so many different aspects to it, yeah, that it's kind of I'm not sure where you'd really pin it down. It's somewhat self-help, yeah, somewhat documenting my own life story, I suppose, and then yeah, meditations in there, and then there's a very strong esoteric element to it also. So yeah, I guess there's quite a bit going on.
And it does say, though, it's Letting Glow, A Guide to Intuition, Spirituality, and Living Consciously. So that is in the subtitle, of the book. But I think, you know, your approach to writing it was very interesting to me because it kind of begins and ends with your mother. And I was really touched by that because I'm at a point with my mother. She's elderly. I'm her primary caregiver. And so all of that talk about your mother and with COVID and losing your mom, it really touched me very, very deeply.
Oh, thank you.
So I'm very sorry that you've had to go through that. And at the same time, I think there's been some beautiful things that have happened through that.
Yeah, such a strange one. You know, I wouldn't have written the book if my mom was still here, but for sure, you know. And I kind of almost look at it and everything that's come from it or that I've learned about, that I wrote about, almost like a parting gift from my mom. You know, I wasn't really on this kind of spiritual path at the time of her passing. You know, I was always kind of on the fence with this stuff. And definitely the last few years, it really wasn't, you know, an interest of mine. But yeah, you know, it's as well as obviously just losing my mom. I mean, it's like stepping into an alternate universe, you know, when you lose a parent. And of course, I can't speak for everyone because people have different relationships with their parents. But for me, yeah, it's really like, you know, that person is really the one true witness to your life, you know. And when they're gone, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm like, it's just me now, you know. So yeah, it's just been such a learning process in all sorts of different ways.
Losing a parent, it changes the course of your life. It changes how you look at the world. It really does, because everything's different. You know, you know, your parents kind of like your compass in this world. And once you've lost that compass, you have to figure out a new path. Because I lost my dad years ago in the 90s, and it was very difficult to go through that. And so reading this book, it kind of made me think that it made you go back and look at your own life. And so when you go back and you look at your life and you talk about experiencing astral projection as, I don't know how old you were at that time, you were young and not really, you didn't really have the vocabulary for what had happened to you.
But when I almost still don't.
And when you look at it, looking back now with perspective, do you kind of see that you were on that path your whole life? You just didn't recognize it so much?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so, you know, if you don't mind, I guess we'll talk about mom passing and what really was the catalyst. And I don't feel like I'm really giving much away because the book literally starts with this in the first couple of pages. Yeah. But yeah, something happened around her passing that just really made me look at other, I don't know, I suppose you can call them supernatural events, just to go way out there already, and sort of made me reevaluate them. You know, it would seem that something would happen every few years, and I would be like, okay, well, that was weird or interesting or something like that, or in some cases, very profound. But then I just sort of, you know, just put it away. I was like, okay, I don't really know what to do with that, so just put it behind me and move on and, you know, get on with my relationships, get on with work and all that stuff. But yeah, then what happened with my mum, the night before she passed was really, yeah, just sort of changed everything and changed my perspective on everything. So just to tell that story. So we'd been through the pandemic, and it was January, 2021. And I was hoping to see my mum at Christmas. She lived on a place called the Isle of Wight, which is a very, rural place at the south of England, a small island. And I'm based in London, and I hadn't seen her for a few months. Just through government lockdowns and things like that. And we were in another lockdown at the time. But yeah, my mum was in her mid 70s. She was in sort of reasonably good health, but various age related health problems. And we would FaceTime every day. And then on this particular day, I think it was maybe the third time we'd spoken that day, she answered the phone. And as she answered it, there was a man leaning in from the other side of the screen. And I saw him long enough that I could describe him. He was maybe, I would say, in his 60s, thin and gray hair, glasses, and kind of a gaunt-looking face. And I didn't recognize him. And I assumed that he was, you know, she would have sort of nurses go in there every now and again to help her with her meds and things like that. But it was quite late at night. It was 9:30, 10, and I'd never seen them there past 6. And again, just to emphasize, we're in lockdown, and, you know, it was a very quiet place where she lived anyway. Didn't have any other family there. So I was kind of shocked when I saw this guy. I was like, okay, well, who the hell is that? You know? And as she moved away, he went out of shot And I said to her, I was like, well, who's that? And she said, who's what? And I said, well, I just saw somebody. Who's the guy, you know? And she said, no, there's not been anyone here all day. And then she started telling me about her day. And I said, look, okay. It just kind of threw me off. And I said, look, Mom, sorry to interrupt, but I just saw someone. Like, who was it, you know? And she just dismissed it. And I would always be able to tell when somebody was with her because she would kind of put on these airs and graces. She'd speak a lot posher. It was like really annoying. You know, I could never get a straight conversation out of her. But she wasn't doing any of that, and she didn't acknowledge anyone, and, you know, she lived in a very small house. And I spoke to her for about 45 minutes to an hour, and just sort of halfway through, I thought, well, okay, I don't know what that was. I guess I was mistaken. And it just didn't sort of sit logically in my brain. And we talked, and we said good night. And then the next morning, I got woken up to a phone call from a neighbor that my mom was having a heart attack. And then she passed within moments of me getting that call. And, you know, through obviously the shock of losing her, I wasn't expecting that to happen. And everything that comes with that, this thing sort of sat at the back of my mind about the, you know, I was like, well, okay, what was that? Are we talking ghosts? Are we talking spirit guides? And I just kind of sort of kept going over it for a few months. And eventually I was like, okay, well, if you can call it a logical conclusion, it seemed to me that that was the logical conclusion, that it was somebody letting me know that she was about to pass. So yeah, that event really made me look at some other things that had happened in the past and sort of reevaluate everything, and then very much dive into this whole area of exploring spiritual practices.
You do address it in the book, but can you share who you think it was with, who you think that person was with your mother?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because I've changed my mind since I wrote the book.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I'm glad I asked this question.
Well, it's a strange one, and maybe this is, again, maybe this is what I was talking about earlier. You know, sort of a bit of time goes by, and then you sort of you over question things and all that kind of stuff. I sort of came settled with the conclusion that I thought it was my dad, who I hadn't seen since I was 18, and not to sound too sort of dismissive of him, but he had like one lung. He smoked a lot. He still continued to smoke with only one lung, and then he drank a lot, and at least when I last saw him. And I was thinking, okay, if he carried on like that, chances are he probably wasn't going to be around that long. And then there was COVID, you know. So it seems, okay, I thought, well, perhaps him, you know, it could kind of fit his description, as I remembered how he looked, you know, last time I saw him. But I'm not sure. I still don't know, you know. I've very much gone down this path of looking into mediumship, and I believe that he's come up and nobody said anything about that phone call, you know. So I don't know. It's still a question mark.
And it's almost as if someone came to her to help her, and you were able to see him, you know, maybe help her cross, like a parent or a loved one, you know. I don't know. It's so fascinating to me that.
Yeah.
And then I was reading it, I thought, well, maybe your mother wasn't, you know, maybe there was someone in her home, but. Then as I read that, I'm like, she would have acknowledged it. There'd be no reason for her, you know, she wouldn't have been that out of it. You're having a conversation with her.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would speak to people about it afterwards, and sort of depending which way they leaned, they would be like, well, it could have been someone there. You know, you don't know. And I can't say with 100% certainty that there was absolutely no one there, as I wasn't there. But just knowing her routine, you know, the whole year she'd pretty much been alone. The time of night, again, knowing all the neighbors, it's a very small place. Knowing her day-to-day life, I really truly believe that there's no one was physically with her. And then again, just how she was acting and just sort of, you know, like every time I would be able to tell that there was someone there, because like I say, she would just wouldn't be herself, you know. She would kind of put on a weird sort of performance for somebody that was eavesdropping on the call, and she wasn't doing any of that. So yeah, I, you know, and then just the fact that she did pass the next day just led me to that conclusion. Yeah. And I kind of sort of came to the conclusion that it's actually sort of my story, you know. My mom didn't see the person. I saw them. And so it's kind of like, was my experience. So it sort of, I was kind of worried about family members reading the book and thinking, well, that's a bit much or something, you know, to sort of describe that. But yeah, I've sort of made peace with it, and I've talked about it a lot. And it's a strange one because, you know, it's one of the worst, if not the worst thing that's happened to me personally. And then I'm talking about it a lot, and it kind of somewhat loses something along the way. Yeah, the amount of times I've talked about it, I don't know. I'm not sure what it is now, you know. Now it's kind of part of a book, but yeah.
I would like for you to take this away from this conversation that for someone like me who doesn't know you, doesn't know your mother, I found it quite beautiful. It kind of opens your eyes to other possibilities. And
oh, thank you.
You know, so just I appreciate you sharing that story.
So do thank you very much.
Do you kind of look back on, because when you do lose a parent, it makes you look at everything again. So I found it very interesting. The format of this book goes way back into your life. And as an outsider looking into your life, it kind of looks like you were always on this path to where you're at now, but you went off the path, as we all do.
Yeah, definitely. Like, as you mentioned earlier, there were some early signs, I think. As a kid, I remember sort of, I suppose, paranormal things happening around the house, things moving. There was always like things banging and this and that. And then as I kind of entered my teens, I sort of thought, well, did those things really happen? I don't know, you know, was it just my overactive childhood imagination? Or so I just kind of, again, just dismissed these things. And then, yeah, somewhere around my mid-teens, I read something about astral projection and I thought, well, that sounds kind of cool. So I tried it out, and then immediately it happened, right? And I had this experience of well, I just laid down and I concentrated really hard on getting up without getting up. And within, I don't know, I couldn't actually say in how long it took, but it didn't seem to take too long. I felt this separation and I felt myself sort of floating above my body. So this sounds so out there, sorry. And as well as laying on the bed, I could feel myself in two separate places. But what was really the sort of thing that clinched it later on for me, not at the time, was I suddenly had a third perspective, as though I were watching this whole thing from the side of the room. So I could see myself on the bed, even though I was laying there with my eyes closed. I could see myself above the bed, but this was from a third perspective, and that was kind of overwhelming. I think I was 14, something like that, and I just kind of snapped myself out of it, and I was like, okay, well, I just couldn't really grasp it, you know. And again, just sort of put it away. And then I remember a few years later watching a TV show, and somebody called in. And they described this exact same experience of the sort of three perspectives, which I'd never heard of before in any of the books that I'd read or anything like that. And I kind of thought, all right, well, maybe that did happen. And then, yeah, it would just seem that every few years something would be sort of tapping me on the shoulder. I hit my mid-20s, traveled a lot, went to like many different countries, and I ended up settling in Northern Europe in Finland. And sort of fell into this lifestyle of being sort of very self-indulgent. I ended up running bars and nightclubs, and a lot of vices, I suppose, come with that. It's a very strange environment to be in. You know, you're kind of sleeping all day, working at night, and then you're around people that are just sort of out partying all the time. And it turns into what you feel like is normal life, and it's not normal life at all. You know, this kind of like a very fringe lifestyle. And I was kind of just got very involved in all of that somewhere in my mid-30s, and sort of, again, just wasn't really thinking of anything too deep or spiritual. I was just kind of doing what I thought was fun at the time, which was like my main concern. And then again, another event happened, around then. Shall I go into that one? I don't know if you...
Yeah, want to say something real quick about the astral projection that you mentioned.
Oh, yeah,
in the
sorry,
book,
yeah.
I've always found it to be a very odd concept to me. And
yeah.
And I can't really wrap my brain around it. But you put it in a way that allowed me to kind of wrap my brain around it. You said, you described it as your ghost body leaving your physical body.
Right.
Well, yeah, as weird as that might sound, that clicked with me. And I'm like, that's the first time astral projection has ever made any sense to me. I was like, right. Oh, wait. Because I do believe that, you know, energy, you know, once you die, your energy, where does that go? Like, that's why I believe in paranormal and spirits and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That kind of makes sense to me. But put like that, I was like, oh, okay. It gave me a different perspective. So thank you for that.
Well, that's interesting because, I mean, I would sort of now, I don't know how I would untangle it. You know, people, it's like such a deep rabbit hole to go down. Like when people talk of astral projection experiences now, often there's a lady over here, and I wrote about her in the book. Her name escapes me now, but she was kind of a big researcher into this and then just completely turned against it and became like a full-blown skeptic, because a lot of the experiences that people would talk of as astral projection, and she did it herself. She was studying at Oxford University, and she described sort of flying around, for want of a better expression. And the Oxford that she looked at, from whatever perspective it was when she was having this astral projection experience, didn't match the actual real life Oxford that she knew. So she was like, okay, well, this can't be real. You know, this has got to be some sort of trick of the brain, you know, that because it wasn't the same town as she recognized it. I suppose like maybe in a dream or something like that. So it's such a there's so much to go into with it that way smarter people have explored it more than I have.
The fact that you have even had an experience is quite remarkable. I can't say that I ever have.
Yeah, I'd be interested to explore it again. I haven't really dove into. There's been so much other stuff these last couple of years that's sort of fallen to the wayside. You know, I've really sort of concentrated on the whole mediumship and life after death stuff.
And
One
of the other things I found real interesting with your young life was experimenting with the Ouija board. And I think a lot of us, you know, I wasn't so Ouija board-y. I was tarot cards, and I read tarot cards start when I was about 15 till, I don't know, into my 20s. Because I was fascinated with kind of tapping into all that, the other side, and connecting with it. But you've kind of felt like, to the extent you went to the doctor, and like, what's the matter with my, I'm assuming your brain was scanned, you know, is there something wrong with me?
Well, yeah, I remember, the Ouija board experience again. So it's so weird to like talk about these things. I'll talk about them like one after the other, but there are like years or decades between some of these events, you know, that I wasn't looking at any of this stuff. But yeah, like you say, when we're teenagers, I suppose we all kind of, a lot of us have this phase of being interested in that kind of stuff. And yeah, me and a friend, we got kind of really addicted to messing around with this Ouija board that we made up ourselves. Actually, we didn't buy one. We sort of like put it together ourselves. And it seemed that something was happening, and I was getting this very physical sensation. And the way that we described it was that something was passing through us, whether it was that or not, I'm not sure. But we both had this kind of very physical thing that we felt something touching us, essentially. And I feel that I've experienced that again in recent times. And I'm not sure, again, these things, they're so personal, you know, they're so subjective. Mm-hmm. It's like when you try to describe it to other people, it's all very vague and wishy-washy, you know. So that I don't blame a lot of people that are skeptical about this stuff. But yeah, something happened. And then we stopped using it because it kind of freaked me out. I got to that point. And then whatever this thing was, this physical sensation, it would just start happening spontaneously, which I associated with that. And I didn't know what else to do. But yeah, I did end up going to a doctor because I didn't know what was going on. I can't really remember the outcome of that. I guess they didn't see anything wrong with me. And eventually I had a friend that was part of her family were kind of this, I think they were Irish, and they, you know, were classed themselves as a gypsy family. And she gave me this very basic sort of protection idea to just sort of like envision a protective aura of white light around me, very basic. But I didn't know what else to do at the time. And I started doing that. And then whatever was going on just completely stopped.
See, I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's really pretty cool that you figured out a way to get it to stop.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that would have made you crazy.
Right. And now sort of like, you know, learning all that I've learned, that's like such a basic tool, you know, to just, you know, just sort of envision a white light around you, like, you know, pretty much start many meditations like that, you know. But yeah, it works, you know, whatever was going on.
And everything that you've learned too over the years and things you've read about and experienced, kind of looking back, were you able to kind of fill in a little bit what that experience really was all about?
That in particular, I think that we definitely connected with something, but as I wrote in the book, I'm not sure, maybe it was just some sort of dormant awakening of my own sort of energy, you know, that actual feeling of I've experienced it since, and not in a scary way. So perhaps we just misinterpreted it, you know. And it's such a tricky time then when you're a teenager anyway, because we didn't really trust each other, my friend and myself, you know, or, you know, it's just like such a fragile egos and all that stuff's going on. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to sort of put it into a logical sort of perspective, if you can use the word logical, around things like that.
So when you go on and you're working in the bars and stuff, which also is a very normal thing many of us have done, but it's interesting because even though you would be partying and having fun with all your friends, it always seemed to come back to you were kind of learning lessons along the way.
Yeah, well, I had like a literal very rude awakening just in the midst of that. And it was almost as though, you know, I think I called it a metaphysical slap in the face. I was very self-indulgent. I wasn't sort of doing anything too horrific, but I was very... wasn't really concerned about anyone's feelings. I remember I just kind of was just falling into different relationships. And then the job that I was doing, this running bars and clubs, I'd essentially just fallen into it through staying in that environment and not really having any direction, you know. And to be honest, I was mid-30s at this point, so I probably should have known better, really, you know, by that time. But yeah, I woke up one morning and just to stress this, that there were no drugs involved or anything like that. I wasn't really a sort of a drugs person. There was definitely plenty of alcohol around in that environment, but I remember waking up on one random morning in the summer, and again my mid-30s, and I just kind of had this thought, and it wasn't like a new thought, it wasn't anything that I hadn't sort of contemplated before, but just this idea that, you know, we only have the moment of now, you know, that's all we've truly got. And, you know, sort of everything else is just like a memory or an idea of what we want to do in the future. But we only truly have now, right, all the time. And just as I sort of pondered this morning, it was as though something switched. And it was, I can't describe how overwhelming it was. Just something shifted in me, and almost physically. And it was though I were having this depersonalization experience, and I was just suddenly outside of myself, just watching myself, almost like every thought was just so immediate and intense, and again sort of all ideas of the past or of the future just fell away, and it was just suddenly now, you know, and it was just now, there was nothing else. And it didn't stop, and I was like, okay, well, it was overwhelming. You know, people talk about connecting with the moment of now, it was like that times 1,000. And I couldn't switch it off, and I thought, okay, well, I'll just go walk this off. And I put some headphones in, and I went down for a walk by the sea, which I lived nearby, and it just didn't stop. It was just now, 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 all the time. And I was like, okay, this is nuts. This was just and I sort of, again, it's so difficult to describe, but it just wouldn't stop. I remember looking down the road and sort of just the it sounds so weird and basic, but just thinking, okay, well, I'm going to be over there in a minute. Where is that now? Where's that moment now? It just didn't make any sense. All of a sudden, it was just overwhelming, and I started thinking I was going nuts. I went to work that night and sort of tried to explain what was going on, and people were like, okay, sure, you know, it sounds a bit weird. And after like 2 weeks of this, I thought, okay, I could barely function. And I ended up going to a doctor. And they use the word psychosis, which just terrified me even more, and gave me some anti-anxiety meds, gave me some sleeping pills. Sleeping pills would knock me out, but the anti-anxiety pills did nothing. And I would wake up in the morning and this whole process would start again. And it was just, it was impossible. Like I just couldn't drift off and think, well, I'm going to do that later. I'm going to have this for dinner, or what did I do last night? It was just now all the time. And it was terrifying. And I went to another doctor, same diagnosis, psychosis, although he said it was mild psychosis because I was still holding down my job and somewhat functioning. And the best way to describe it, how I've described it before, was it was as though I were hanging onto a very slippery, greasy pole by my fingertips, you know? I was kind of just like barely keeping my head above water. But otherwise, it just felt like reality was slipping away. And somewhere down this, you know, months in at this point, and it just didn't stop. It just didn't let up. I found a therapist, and what attracted me to him was that I saw he was a hypnotist. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to go to this guy and be like, okay, just zap this away, you know, just make it stop.
Please.
I just want to get back to the hurt. Yeah. And he was like, no, I can't do that. You know, he said, I mean, I don't know how it works. This is just what he said, but he said, you know, we would need a trigger, like a point to go back to. And it doesn't sound like you've got one, you know. But interestingly, he listened to me and he said, look, he said, I think what you're experiencing is actually ultimate reality and that you're having a spiritual awakening. And I was like, okay, well, whatever, just make it stop. You know, I just want to get back to where I was before. And he sort of pointed out that, and he started using words like mystic and things like that, which I felt weirdly uncomfortable about. I was like, okay, well, that sounds a bit grandiose, but at the time I still didn't care because, and without this taking, you know, without going down too dark a path, I was starting to get the idea that I was like, okay, if this is the way that my brain is functioning, then I'm done. I'm like out of here. There's no joy in this. And I didn't see any sort of tragedy in going out on my own terms because I thought, well, this isn't working for me anymore. And I was starting to have thoughts like that. But he gave me a very different way of looking at it. And he gave me what were essentially some very basic grounding meditations. But at the time, they were a lifeline and just very gradually brought me back. So I started meditating with these things that he gave me. And ever so slowly, I would have like one good day, you know. And then a couple of weeks later, I'd have two good days and so on. And I sort of eventually came back online, you know, and just thankful to sort of have my sanity. You know, I really felt like I'd dealt with, you know, a very strong mental health issue, which I still believe it was. But in hindsight, and again, all the things I've learned since, people talk about, and a few people have got in touch with me actually since reading the book, and saying they've had similar experiences. But people talk about something called the shamanic sickness and how in olden times, you know, a medicine person would sort of go to the brink of madness and come back. And then they would be the person that the people would go to for spiritual advice and all the rest of it. And again, yeah, as it seems to be going, I don't know, 12 years later, I feel that maybe all these things were in place for where I am now. I don't know.
It's such an interesting experience for me because I can't imagine, number one, what you went through. But at the same time, as I'm reading it, because I've had a couple pretty profound experiences in my life where I realized I'm not living in now. That I'm living in the past, I'm living in the future. I think so many of us are.
Yeah.
And so when I read that, it made me think of those times in my life. And the interesting thing for me was the life lessons for me about being more focused on being present came from my dog. Kind of a lesson in being present, but at the same time, it was like so overwhelming. Why?
You know, yeah, I do wonder the same thing. I'm like, okay, I could have had an easier.
Your dog could have given you that lesson.
Yeah, you know, but it was so overwhelming. Like it wasn't a pleasant experience at all. And I still wouldn't like to go through it again. But yeah, again, with hindsight, it seems that learning about meditation and then learning about mediumship, I think that there's nothing more important than, amongst other things, than connecting with the moment of now, you know, to sort of be able to appreciate that that's all we've got, you know. With any meditation, it really comes down to that, you know, connecting with your breath, connecting with the moment of now. And then with mediumship as well, if you're essentially going to go into the past and talk about somebody that's passed on, then what better way to do that is to be first very grounded and very aware of where you are right at this moment, you know? So yeah, that kind of makes sense in hindsight, but at the time wasn't much fun.
No. And it also led you to the therapist who kind of opened up some, He definitely opened up things for you.
Oh yeah. I mean, well,
you wouldn't have met him had you not had that profound experience.
Which reminds me, I still need to contact him and send him a copy of this book, actually.
I think he would love it, because he definitely changed your course.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he definitely did. And it was interesting because, you know, I'd seen some very traditional doctors, or two of them, who were both just like, okay, here's some meds. And he was like, no, man. He was like, you're cool. You know, I feel like I found like this one person in the whole of Helsinki where I was living. He was probably the best person that I could have found, you know, like he was kind of this like old hippie guy. As well as a qualified professional therapist, he was also had a bit more of a spiritual insight into things, you know, which I didn't have at the time at all, you know.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Bill Webster. You can buy his debut book, Letting Glow, A Guide to Intuition, Spirituality, and Living Consciously on Amazon or wherever you purchase books. You can also visit his website at philwebster.com. That's Phil, spelled with two L's. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial-free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it for 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and you'll find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.